Consider the ocean. For my thinking is made from liquid. In sleep, my lover breathes tidal against my bones, and hers are dreams I wish myself inhaled into. Always I have had being without this body to consider, and because my father's cough is a storm swell, I ask a star, from what coast sails the lung which will eventually explode him? And the star tells me what has passed through so much blue must stop passing here. I have seen my grandfather lost in the foam and his Alzheimer's slipping between my mother's fingers and her hair behind her all over the wrecked sand like seaweed. For I am the shore where everyone I love ends. The brown of my mother's perm pulling apart. The three gone teeth from my father's mouth fallen down. And my sister Sarah is a scattered mist I can't gather together. How long a crew must pass as one through water before it arrives at its disintegration? Is it the wind the crew shares or a family touching? Is it love? For I am so solid, I am told. I am so solid, the star told. And what would I know of holding a thing, not me, together? I am neither ship nor ocean. I am the thing the ocean wrecks the ship into.
Mm, I love it. That was great. Good start. You know, your poetry book, The Night We Set the Dead Kid on Fire, this isn't a collection of poetry about peace and serenity and walks along the beach, although you did have a little bit of beach scene in there. But there's violence and sorrow and suffering and, well, dead kids on fire. So let's start with the title. It's quite a show grabber.
Yeah. I was interested in the idea of kind of like a funeral pyre, you know, the idea that you take people that matter to you who have died by kind of shining a light on them or setting them on fire or illuminating them, I guess, you know, you're respecting kind of where you come from and showing everybody, I guess, that they mattered. I mean, that was one reason why I chose the title. The other reason too is like a hook, you know, I wanted it to kind of ask you a question. I wanted it to kind of grab your attention, and I wanted it to be kind of a pinhole into the collection itself, you know, so that you're asking, oh, okay, like that, wow, that's interesting. Clearly there's some violence maybe that happens here. And so that's, I think, so kind of twofold is why I chose the title, obviously, because I wanted to remember, you know, obviously my friends and family and people that had died, and also because I wanted you to be interested in the book and hopefully get your hands on it.
And the image itself, in fact, is an eye grabber, you could say. It's a dark silhouetted image. We don't see a face, but we do see that this person is holding a crowbar, and which right there, you know, is a sense of violence just looking at the image. And then that image shows up again in one of the poems with a crowbar and your girlfriend back then.
Yeah, I wanted, I think in that, the cover, I wanted it to be like in your face. I kind of wanted the violence when I was a kid was something that I thought was normal. I thought it was a part of everybody's kind of upbringing. And it wasn't until I kind of got to grad school in Michigan and was talking to somebody and was like, yeah, well, you know, there were fights probably every weekend at parties when I was a kid. And they were like, what? You know, and I was like, yeah, I saw people get hit with crowbars and I saw people get skateboards and they were very surprised. And I was like, it wasn't like that for you, you know, that didn't happen in your upbringing, you know? And so I kind of realized I had this like kind of wealth of memory that not like an experience that not a lot of people had seen.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to kind of, I wanted to write about it in a way that here's the experience and not judge it, really. You know, here, I wanted to give you the experience and you can make your decisions about whether or not it was right or incorrect or those kinds of things. And I also wanted to show the reader that I was complicit in that as well. You know, I was a part of it. I wasn't above it or anything. And so that was important to me too.
Complicit, perhaps, but there's also some forgiveness in there.
Yeah. It's difficult, I think, to... in that poem particularly, I think what matters in that, I think you're talking about the poem, The Hardest Thing. That poem is kind of about how my feelings about a particular situation are subservient to, you know, my lover's, right? Of course, like something didn't happen to me directly. It happened to my lover.
Yeah.
So how do we if my lover decides to forgive someone, right, then how do I kind of try to get to that point where I can do it? You know, it's like, it's kind of like the perspective of the poem is shifted, and I'm trying to forgive the person, even though, you know, everything in my upbringing says to, you know, that you answer violence with violence, right?
Yeah.
So that poem was particularly difficult, but I hope I got the feeling across.
Do you think that we write best, or is that a stereotype, out of fear and pain? I've heard that that's where growth happens, that we tend not to grow when we're happy and content, but we grow and achieve some kind of enlightenment. Either that or we end up in flames out of fear and pain. Was that a big part of your motivation in becoming a poet?
I go to art to explore, you know, particularly difficult sets of feelings, right? Like, and I do appreciate like poems of joy and stuff. And I've actually been trying to write more of those recently because I realized so many of the poems in that book are morose and trying to answer difficult questions.
Yeah.
But I think too, I go to the poem to try and like answer a question about something that I don't really understand of a memory. You know, that was like the reason, I think, or the impetus to write a lot of the poems in the book. You know, this particular situation happened. I don't know how I feel about it. I don't know if it was okay that it happened. How can I like kind of dig back in that experience and try to come towards some kind of understanding, like you were saying, growth.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know particularly if it was fear or pain, but I think more it was like trying to dig around and answer questions I had about those particularly difficult kind of situations. You know, one of the lines in the book is like, I have to think about feelings for months before I get to have them.
Mm.
And that, you know, that kind of thing, like the idea that I'm not sure how I feel about this situation. You know, I need to dig around in it a little more and figure out actually like, what is the correct feeling, you know, for this violent moment that happened. And so a lot of it for me is not necessarily born out of fear or pain, but just kind of like trying to make sense, trying to dig around in those pieces or those shards of memory and to make some kind of meaning out of it, I guess, or to answer the question, you know, that I'm asking.
I'm guessing that's more typical than not when feelings are intense, perhaps even overwhelming, that we have to let them sit for a while before we can really look at them.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I think you're 100% right, I think, in that, you know, for me, it becomes difficult to write about something when I'm in that moment, you know, or I'm in that mindset. But if I can get some distance from it, you know, and get some perspective, then I can kind of begin to dig around further in that. Yeah, I think you're definitely correct.
And you even took on a mass shooting that happened in Kalamazoo. Talk about your connections to Kalamazoo. Your PhD is from Western Michigan University.
I really had a great time when I lived there. I met my fiance in that town, actually, in Kalamazoo. Her name is Anne. And I studied under Nancy Imers and Bill Olson at Western. Man, they were just so great. Bill Olson is like, he has this really, first of all, he's just super brilliant, such a brilliant guy. Like going out to breakfast with him, you'll leave with a list of, you know, 50 authors you need to read or whatever, it's just because he's so smart and so well-read. And he kind of showed me a lot of, like, kind of a more democratic way to look at poetry. When I came to Western, I kind of had a lot of rules. You know, I was like, oh, I have to do this in a poem, and I have to do this, and anything that doesn't do that sucks.
Yeah.
But Bill kind of opened my mind up to, like, the possibilities of art making and the possibilities of, he kind of taught me that there's something to be learned from every piece of art. Like, whether or not you like it or whether or not it moves you immediately, you know, he just everything, you know, like somebody, you know, like a street preacher or something who is on the street, the way he's performing. I started to see that there was like something to be learned everywhere, you know, in somebody talking on the street or in a musician that I was watching play at a bar or, you know, any of those kinds of things. And so that was really great. But to get to your question, yeah, with Kalamazoo, I underwent some difficult times there. I used to play cards at a place called Wayside. Do you remember that place?
Yeah.
Yeah. And there was a shooting there.
Right.
Of a guy that I played cards with all the time. His name was Damien. He was a really, really great guy. And the night that the shooting happened, I was very lucky. My fiance was like, yeah, you should come home. You know, I think she got off work early that night. And Damien I passed him as I was leaving, and he was like, "Hey, man, stay and like have a couple drinks with me. Like, I'll buy you a drink." And I was like, "No, man, like I'm headed home tonight, you know, maybe next time or whatever." And I gave him a hug. And then I woke up the next day and my fiance was like, "Hey, there was a shooting at Wayside last night." And I was like, "Wow, really?"
Yeah.
And I came to find out it was him, you know, and it was just so, oh man, it was devastating because he was such a great guy, you know, and he would come there with his girlfriend, and he had a couple kids. Man, he was just a really cool person, you know? And like, we were not close friends by any means, but you know, we played cards together. So we'd see each other a couple times a week. And it was just very difficult to deal with that situation, like amongst a bunch of people who played cards,
yeah.
You know, like nobody who played cards in that community was really, really great friends with him. And then to kind of see how that community dealt with it was weird too. You know, I went to a vigil the next night for him. And I write a couple poems about it in the book. And, you know, it was just kind of shocking the way people were kind of dealing with it. Like, it was almost like it was PTSD or something. I don't know. But some people who had actually witnessed the shooting were there the next night and were just like, "Yeah, Damien died right there. Yeah, you can like see blood over there." You know, they were just very like kind of one note about the whole thing. There was not any kind of emotion. And man, that, and the next night at the vigil, you know, there was like a couple, like a minute of silence, and then everyone just started playing cards again. And it was like it never happened. And man, it just, like, that kind of really affected me. And I was a part of that too. You know, I was playing cards right next to everybody else. So that situation really, really, really spoke volumes to me about just kind of the way that we deal. I mean, the way that we deal with tragedy is we have to move on. To see it just so quickly was difficult. And with the mass shooting, which happened, you know, a year later or 2 years later or whatever, my fiance was out that night, and I was actually gambling that night as well at a Firekeeper's casino. And we had talked, and she was like, "Oh, I'm going to take an Uber home." You know, she had texted me, and then that whole shooting thing happened. You know, he was an Uber driver or whatever.
Right.
And so again, it was like, man, it was just trying to deal with those kinds of tragedies. It just made me think about like how often gun violence or any kind of major tragedies happen. And I think they happen again and again in the book. And one of the questions I'm trying to answer is like, how do we deal with it in the best way? And how do we still be respectful to the lives that were lost, but also noticing that like the only thing we can do is to continue living. And that's kind of sad. So all of those kinds of things happened to me in Kalamazoo. And, you know, I'm very thankful for my time there, but those two events were particularly difficult, I think. You know, and as I continue to think about mass shootings, you know, it seems like we just kind of continue to move on and not even really talk about them anymore, which is even scarier, you know? So yeah, that Kalamazoo. I mean, it was a great place, but those are two obviously tragedies that happened there. Yeah.
Questions of the day. Unfortunately, we're not the only place where they're going on. They seem to be going on everywhere right now. So
right.
I suppose we all have to figure out how to deal with violence. What you said earlier, we can't look at the emotions right away because they're too big. Maybe that's what you were seeing, that people just played cards and maybe it was a month later or a year later that all of a sudden you either have to deal with it or it's going to corrupt something inside of you if you don't.
Yeah, I think you have to look at it, definitely. Like, I think that And it does make me wonder about a lot of those other people who actually witnessed it, you know, because there's a couple people that I continued to hang out with after that. And I know that it affected them. You know, there's no way that they could witness a murder, you know, like somebody being shot like next to them, because when Damien was shot, he ran into the poker room and kind of dived underneath the table where everyone was playing. And the guy came in and continued to shoot him. So it was like, he basically kind of fell in all their laps, you know, all these people that I'm actually pretty good friends with. And, man, you know, I can't imagine what that must have been like. And they never talked about it. You know, it's really wild. Like that situation. Yeah. You know, how do we deal with gun violence? How do we deal with tragedy?
Yeah.
So I think in the mass shooting poem, I kind of come to the realization, like, maybe we need to be quiet and think about it a while rather than arguing about something or, you know, forgetting about it. We need to just maybe sit with it, you know, and think about it.
Yeah. Knee-jerk reactions maybe aren't any better.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
You've said that you apply the blue-collar work ethic to your writing. So is it persistence and sweat most of all that develops a good writer?
For me, I know other people, maybe the muse comes to them a little easier, but for me, I have to get dirty for long periods of time to make that happen. Whether it's just kind of playing in language, you know, riffing off of lines or that kind of thing for long periods of time or whatever. I try to work really, really hard at it, you know, and I've kind of approached music in a similar way. You know, I think that the only way you're going to get better at something, in my opinion, is just to go at it daily. Leonard Cohen, actually, there's a really great book called Songwriters on Songwriting, which is actually a book I got from the Kalamazoo Library. And Leonard Cohen talks about that. He says, like, other songwriters like Dylan or Tom Petty, he felt like songs just came to them. But for him, he had to, like, get up at 4 a.m. and work at it for 7 hours, you know, before he could find a song or write a song. And I think for me, I just try to work super hard, you know, because I've seen my parents, you know, both my parents work 6 days a week my whole life, you know, at kind of blue collar jobs. And so for me, I'm just trying to apply that similar work ethic to art and hope that, you know, if I put enough time in, I will continue to improve or to make some kinds of breakthroughs.
You began as a songwriter, actually, before you were a poet, or is that all intertwined? Talk about your music.
I began as a songwriter. My father was a drummer and a guitarist in a band. They had a kind of a basement studio jam room underneath my room, actually, when I was growing up. So they would always jam on Fridays. He was in a band called Black River. And so music was always kind of a part of me. I didn't really start playing or singing until I was about 18. And one of my friends was, he was in a band, his name was Wyatt, and they had kind of it was a trio at the time, and they were looking for a singer. And I couldn't really sing a note at the time. I hadn't studied music or anything. But I had a sense of rhythm because my dad taught me to play drums when I was younger. I started with them, and then I started taking lessons. Like, I was way behind because they were all jazz musicians. So they were super far ahead of me. I didn't play an instrument, but those guys could all read music. They had all played several different instruments. So my learning curve, you know, was slow at first. But then I started taking private lessons. I took a bunch of class, like music theory classes and music fundamentals. I took piano and voice. And then I started taking some guitar lessons and learned to play guitar. And then I started writing songs. So most of it was like, I wanted to take part in the songwriting process, but I couldn't because I didn't know enough about music. Once I kind of learned that, then I could write songs on my own as well, just kind of on an acoustic that were more centered around the vocals. And so I was way into that. And then I started, you know, so once I started writing songs and having to do the lyrics thing, then I kind of got into poetry more. And that was, you know, because I was like, okay, you know, I should take a few classes in this if it's something I want to pursue. And what I really loved about kind of poems is that, you know, I always loved to read. Ever since I was a kid, my mom read to me, you know, every night. I was really into books and stuff. And I realized that poetry was kind of a place for, like, the intellectual side of my mind to collide with the emotional side in a space. Mm-hmm. You know, you could be a little smart ass kind of if you wanted to in a poem is what I was reading. You know what I mean? Like, in songs, it's kind of, because there's only so much space, you kind of have to write in a simpler way, I guess. It's hard to explain, but, you know, you can't use a bunch of huge words or anything like that, I guess, to say it simply, you know, because they don't sound good, right?
Mm-hmm.
I started kind of writing poems because of that reason at first, and then I realized it was just kind of a cool space to experiment with things, you know. And then so for a long time I was just kind of doing both, you know, and I wanted to pursue music, and I did for a long time. You know, we toured, I was in a band, Siko, S-I-K-O, it's kind of like a funk rock thing.
Mm-hmm.
And we toured the U.S. and had a great time, but I kind of realized that I needed for myself anyways, more kind of security. So I went and got, you know, I went to grad school in San Diego and then got my PhD from Western, and pursued the poetry thing. I've continued to play songs, but not in a band really anymore.
So you're going to be reading here in Kalamazoo on December 12th as part of that Gwen Frostick series. What can the audience expect to hear from you?
Some poems from the book, some new stuff I've been working on recently. I think, as you'll see from poems in the book, I'm trying to do like a narrative lyric thing, right? Like, I kind of want to sing you a story. Right. So I'm kind of like, I'm using narrative aspects, you know, and I want to entertain you, you know, because I come from the music background, I am not interested in poetry that tries to like educate you or be didactic, right? I'm just trying to give you an experience. And what I hope is that it will sound kind of cool and it'll sound pleasing to the ear, but it'll also kind of give you those narrative aspects, you know, like a conflict and something kind of interesting or entertaining to you. And obviously, yeah, like we've spoken about already, you know, there will be some violence and those kind of things. We'll talk about that, definitely.
Well, thank you for taking some time to talk with us today, and we'll see you at the reading.
Yes, Zinta, I can't wait to meet you.